It's amazing with Levelator.
I really love the Levelator. Yeah. Hi, everybody. This is Dean Haglund from the offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core in downtown Los Angeles on a rainy day that certainly is not...
Not Sunday.
No, but a rainy day nonetheless.
Is it?
Well, I guess technically we don't know. Because it's a,
Why wouldn't we know? Well, because we've been so busy prepping the show.
And we're in the offices of Rational Exuberance in the Art Deco Wonder that is Eastern Columbia. And this is your Chilpec Hollywood Hour.
Yay! I am Phil Ernest, your friend in podcasting. Though, of course, you probably know me best as...
The sheriff.
No. The captain of Team Edward.
Yeah, I got mixed up. I was going to go to Occupy LA, and I landed in the tent city of the Twihard girls.
That's funny. You thought it was Occupy, yeah, and it was just a line for Breaking Dawn.
No, they're all camping. They were camping out for a week before the movie at LA Live. I thought we were all fighting the man, and it was a bunch
of, in a way, they were.
I was fighting the man with the girls.
Yes, I am, of course, the captain of Team Edward.
Of course.
I was asked, I volunteered that information on UK radio this week, and they were, some
mortified?
People were upset. Like, first of all, why would I weigh in on it one way or another? That mortified them. And, you know, because it almost required me to give back my membership in the adulthood club. And
I'm surprised you're Team Edward, actually. I thought you'd be...
Well, this was also the other thing. Some people were surprised that I was not... Why not Team Jacob?
Yes.
Because Robert Pattinson was Cedric Diggory in the Harry Potter movie. So I'm really captain of Team Cedric.
Oh, well, see, that's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never saw Water for Elephants.
No.
I wanted to call it Like Water for Elephants, but I think that's Like Water for Chocolate. I'm getting confused.
Yes. Or Like Elephants for Chocolate.
But Water for Elephants, I think, is the name of the film that he did recently that got garnered pretty good reviews, I thought, with Renee Zellweger.
No. Not Alicia Silverstone. It was... the other blonde.
Are you sure it wasn't Renee Zellweger?
I'm positive it wasn't Renee
Zellweger. A friend of mine played Robert Pattinson's mom in the
film.
So I will see it, and I'll let you know whether or not it was Renee Zellweger.
Okay, I'd be delighted.
That's why I'll find out.
I'm pretty sure.
My two-word review, or my three-word review, not Renee Zellweger. Moving on.
Moving on.
So, yes,
Very exciting.
I am, in fact, the captain of Team Edward, and you, Dean Haglund,
junior lieutenant of Team Jacob?
Maybe... Unfortunately, it turns out that yet again, you are not People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive.
I know. I put my own nomination in every year, and again, it comes back unopened. I don't understand it.
Bradley Cooper. Now,
yes.
Again, I say this every year. It's been announced, Sexiest Man Alive, so please, no more voting. Hold all your calls. Bradley Cooper,
who
I thought we were almost done with. Might be why he's now
suddenly
sexiest
the sixth man.
You know, because now I always was a Bradley Cooper fan. I will say this
before the day
as the villain in Wedding Crashers.
Oh yeah,
he was very important in the comedic success of that film. He really was.
He really was.
You know, that is always a kind of a thankless role, and it's very important.
And thankless role in Hangover as being kind of the straight man for all the hilarity going around him.
He came to prominence, if we can say that, or certainly came into national consciousness with his role on Alias.
Oh, Alias,
originally,
that's right.
And it is fascinating to me and somewhat delightful that all these years later, Bradley Cooper, who played the nice guy, best friend of Sidney Bristow, played by Jennifer Garner, that the guy that she really couldn't see that way romantically
is now the sexiest.
That years later he would be the sexiest man alive, and not Michael Vartan, who was being, you know, he was the leading man on that
that's
show.
That's right.
He was the sexy one, you know, the edgy, sexy one. And Bradley Cooper was your pal. Bradley Cooper was your earnest friend.
We should get Michael on the show and see how he feels about that.
Maybe, I guess. So I found that interesting.
Oh,
I find that interesting. I also just find it interesting that he's the one that thus far has certainly proven to have the real movie career.
I know. You can never tell.
And he certainly, you know, I seem facetious in much of what I'm saying, but
most of it.
He was very good on Alias. He really was.
Yeah.
He, to me, really was a standout on that show in terms of his chops.
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't really watch Alias. Is that bad?
It's very bad, Dean Hagelin. Very, very. You are very bad. You may have been runner-up for Sexiest Man Alive if you had watched Alias.
If I only just watched that damn show.
Yeah. Yeah, he beat out Ryan Gosling, apparently. And I can't think. We've talked about this so much before.
Yes.
Entertainment Weekly, People Magazine, these things. Who gets written about? What articles get written? Who gets these things? It's decided by publicists, and it's got to be decided by money, right? How much
I would
paid
think.
Out?
Well, except in the 90s, who was the sexiest man in science fiction? Voted by a British sci-fi magazine.
Yeah, you keep bringing this up, but that had nothing to do with People Magazine in the United States. Voted by a
British
magazine.
I'm just saying that how these things are determined.
Tell the Tom Braidwood story again.
Tom Braidwood's voted.
And I'll list all the Chilpak Hollywood hours that you've mentioned it before.
Voted sexiest man in science fiction.
I'm not saying that... a science fiction magazine in
the
England
UK, yeah.
works on the same financial level as Entertainment Weekly or People Magazine. That's what I'm saying.
Right, but the process must be the same. Of how?
Of course it must be.
Right? Sure, how did they not vote?
How did we get into this?
I don't know.
Just can't believe that Ryan Gosling would have particularly himself been much interested in being, I would think it might be the last thing he would want would be on that cover as Sexiest Man Alive.
It seems rather...
When his credibility and cachet could not be higher as an actor.
As an actor, as a serious actor, and not a piece of beefcake.
And quite frankly, I feel like the publicity move on their end, if this is what it was probably smart to get his name floated like he's in consideration so that a whole bunch of fans could go, well, wait, he's sexier than
Exactly.
Cooper. He gets the best of both worlds.
How did we get on this conversation?
I don't know. I always talk about it every year, though.
I know. And it seems, well, anyway, go ahead.
So, and listen to those back shows every year. Once a year, I talk about People Magazine, Sexiest Man Alive.
Always changing.
And whether you listen to us on Jackalope Radio or TalkSuperstation.com, you can find many of these past episodes, of which I speak, at ChillPackHollywood.com, ChillPackHollywood.com. You can download, stream, subscribe via iTunes and release
so easy.
Simple syndication. And that's the end of another good show. No?
No.
Oh.
Well, we got a whole...
Oh, I'm sorry. We're just getting started.
It's a whole thing. We're about to embark on a Pacific Northwest journey.
How can we be doing that when it's Thanksgiving?
Because in some places, there is no Thanksgiving. No, there is. It's just in a different month.
You know, Thanksgiving is, I think we've talked about this before, my favorite holiday.
I did not know that.
It really is. And the older I get, the more it is my favorite holiday.
I thought it was Columbus Day. So weird.
Only because you and I, of course, reenact every year Columbus's voyage, and in honor of it, we go around to indigenous podcasts and we kick them out and relocate them.
Relocate them and say, we claim this podcast as our own.
No, I do. You know, people always said, when you're growing up, I'm sure you heard this in Canada and you hear this in movies and TV. Wouldn't it be great if every day could be Christmas? Every day Christmas. You know, the day that I think every day, wouldn't it be great if every day was actually Thanksgiving? A whole day about gratitude.
Oh,
a whole day about being thankful.
I thought I was eating and watching a football game.
You see, that's why as I've gotten older, it actually means more to me.
I see. Because you're thankful
together,
for
community
football?
And gratitude.
Oh,
and
right. All of that.
You have a very cold, cold heart, Dean. It's icy cold.
Icy cold. I'm getting prepared for my trip northwest.
And we are spending Thanksgiving in Vancouver.
Yes.
We will be in Seattle.
Yes. Tuesday.
My birthday is on Friday.
Yes. Happy birthday.
And we will be driving past where I was conceived. I just want to say that.
Oh, my God.
So, and I'll point it out. Yeah.
Don't.
So, Tuesday, Northwest Film Forum will be showing The Truth Is Out
say
There.
That? I am grossed out now.
So, the least I could do for you. Taking a gigantic Canadian frosty dump all over my love of Thanksgiving.
In your face. Oh, yes. We'll be in Seattle at the lovely...
Northwest Film Forum.
Northwest Film Forum.
Showing Truth Is Out There.
Yep.
That'll be a lot of fun.
Tickets are available.
I think there are some tickets still available. And the link will be on the show. But it's truthmovieseattle.eventbrite.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then on Thursday, on Thanksgiving, we will be showing The Truth Is... Thursday in Canada.
Yes.
The 24th of November. We will be showing at the Rio Theater in Vancouver, The Truth Is Out There.
Yes.
Doing a big Q&A afterwards. And then later that night, you're doing a big improv reunion show.
Big improv reunion show with all my fellow performers from the Vancouver Theatre Sports League. If you loved it in the 90s, you could see it again now, this Thursday.
Now, are we going to be on Canadian TV?
I think we are.
Can I have my pen back?
I contacted you've been hitting it, so I'm trying to take it away from you so you don't slam the damn thing. We contacted the producers and said we're totally into it, and now we're just waiting to hear. So,
and it was as if we had demanded silence.
I know. Maybe they're just very busy. You know, it's a daily show, so you're always just booking.
Yeah, we do want to know because we got to get out early.
Get out early, get over there and up to the thing.
I love that we've often had production meetings on the show, on the air. Now we're having other people's production meetings on
exactly.
the air. I love that.
Well, yes, we're going to shoot out another email attempt. You know, some of my emails haven't been getting through to people. Again, did you read the mysterious tweet about our show that we did last week for LA Talk Radio with Mark? Did you see that?
No, what?
He said, the NSA really, because somehow the show was preempted or didn't get out or something like that. I didn't follow exactly what all went on.
Oh, I thought that was just a joke.
I thought it was too, but then somebody else I heard said, why isn't this show up or something like that?
So what's the status of that?
I don't know. I haven't been...
They haven't recorded, don't they?
I think so.
Wow.
I know. Maybe we are being. My emails are always 3 to 4 days getting out. As soon as I send them and it doesn't get to people right away, I'm saying.
Interesting. I've had some interesting communications of late, too, myself.
Is that right?
Yeah. So we may be on Canadian TV.
Yes.
We'll see, unless the man gets to them first. You know who is on Canadian TV?
I do.
Playing the Virgin Mary.
Let me think.
Again, a role that if you still had the long hair, I've got to think you would have been up for because you used to pal around with this actor.
I would say,
used to share hair care tips with this performer.
Gordon Pinsent?
Pamela Anderson playing the Virgin Mary on Canadian TV. I never like casting that's nail on the head.
She's angelic.
We are in good stead when you think about it because you, of course, are friends with Pamela Anderson, the Virgin Mary. We're friends with Tucker Smallwood, who played God
in the Sarah Silverman
show. And so we're you know what? I listened to actually. I've had my iPod on shuffle a lot lately.
Good for you.
And
way to mix it up.
Chilpack Hollywood Hour number 94 came up. And it was the show we did with Tucker. And I got drawn into it again. It's such a good show. We've talked about it before. It was such a good show. But Chilpack Hollywood Hour 94. This is Chilpack Hollywood 236 today. So
that's
more than 140.
Year.
That's almost 3 years ago. No, it's the second year.
Oh, yeah.
Coming near the end of the second year.
Yeah.
But more, you know, 3 years ago.
Wow.
It doesn't actually seem that long. I mean, and it was here.
And it was here,
and I remember him being here.
Wow. Time is flying way too quickly, isn't it?
Anyway, it was a really, really good show.
Maybe we should push that one up ahead of, like, just post that one.
I don't know. It might be.
I've been meaning to send you some of the...
We've been putting up more and more of the old ones, and I've been meaning to send you a couple more, so we'll see.
As part of our production meeting on the air, why not? Let's put up the shows that have special guest stars. And then put those ones up first out of sequence.
I can do that.
Yeah? And then that way... So,
I've been going kind of backwards
in sequential order.
Through the catalog for the most part.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll do that. And so I'll put up the ones with interview subjects. And, you know, I've heard actually quite a bit about last week's show from our listeners.
Oh, yes?
Apparently one of our best in a long time.
Very impassioned.
You would think that we would have felt the pressure, the need to try to outdo ourselves this week, but clearly that is not the case.
I think we're outdoing ourselves. Really?
You know what is interesting about going to Vancouver for Thanksgiving is it kind of continues the pattern for me that was set this year where...
You go to Canada.
Starting with like Christmas, where... It's been entirely non-traditional holidays for me. I mean, every holiday, not that the holiday has been an afterthought, it's just there's been somewhere I've needed to be.
Right.
And consequently, it's made them all very memorable.
Yeah.
I mean, I will never forget the Thanksgiving I spent in Vancouver, for example. Mother's Day, I'm just off the top of my head, I was shooting Appearances.
The short vampire film with no zombies in it.
And I thought, oh, well, this is kind of an interesting thing. Everybody, all these people gathered together for, on Mother's Day, and we're all working rather than spending it with our mothers.
Right.
But on the other hand, I mean, it's to a certain degree, it's like what could be a more fitting tribute in a way, because certainly speaking for me, no one's been more encouraging and supportive of my creative expression
than
my mother. And so it, in a way, it's kind of a cool
way to
say thanks by doing really good work.
What you're encouraged to do. Where'd you spend Arbor Day?
I planted 1,000 trees in Nova Scotia.
What? No. That was a wrong thing to do.
Well, maybe that was not me.
It could have been somebody.
We don't celebrate Arbor Day in America. We don't do it.
Why?
Because we're too busy deforesting everything. Nature's evil.
No, it's
not. We have to distance ourselves from nature.
Oh, you got to love Vancouver then.
Speaking of appearances, just finished my work on that short film.
I saw the was that a tweet or a text?
I texted and tweeted. I was very, very pleased.
You were very pleased.
It came out very good. Every stage of this, every person that I brought in, from yourself with the storyboards Cynthia Vincent with the ladies' wardrobe, to the casting itself, to Garrett Watley's sound work and Jason Weichelt's color techniques, as a colorist. Every element of these and many, many more all serve to elevate this piece.
Fantastic.
It's kind of cool where you get to look at it and you go, wow, every single contribution really affected this piece. And usually sometimes on projects there'll be certain things that really stand out to you, even as the director, and you go, well, that's really driving the ship. That really... And of course, the performances and the character and all of this are driving the ship. But just as from a directorial standpoint, it's really cool to look and go, boy, this movie would be less than if you removed any of these aspects.
Right.
That's pretty fun.
Now, you have been on record saying short films are a waste of time, and yet here you are at the end of it, happily satisfied with completing a short film.
And more than that, I've railed more often than I can count. But then again, I was told there'd be no math when I became a podcaster.
Yes, there's math.
I've railed against anything having to do with vampires.
Yeah, I know.
And here's a vampire-themed short film.
Which is probably why you're captain of Team Edward.
Who better, though? Only Nixon could go to China. Only Phil Ernest can make a short film about vampires then. Because, quite frankly, I have no love for the form.
Uh-huh.
I have no love for what vampire stories have become.
Right. So you're the one that can break the mold, blow the tradition out, crazy it up, as it were.
Well, I'm not trying to appeal to any group that does love them now. I'm not trying to ride a wave. I'm not...
chasing a market demographic.
I would put it this way with both the short film and the vampire piece, actually, which was I had nothing to prove one way or another. Right. I didn't need this.
I don't need you. I don't need this film.
But, a lot of times you're making a short film either out of kind of maybe frustration, you want to do something creative, or you're doing it as a calling card, or whatever the reasons are people doing. And my reasons were so far removed from anything like that. I liked the guys who were putting it together, who wrote and produced it, and I wanted to help them. Mm-hmm. I liked the fact that it was a little bit like going back to the gym. I was going to be allowed to both shoot it and direct it.
Yeah.
And the last two films, both of which I've shot, one was a documentary and one was a fictional documentary.
Right.
So working with actors was quite different than looking through the camera,
and
framing shot, doing all the cinematography, while at the same time trying to really be attentive to performance,
and find
are two different skill sets. And so I felt, before I go back into narrative features, which I plan to shoot myself as well as directing some of them, this would be a great workout.
Right.
And it was that. And just at the same time, having complained so much about vampires and zombies and serial killers, being given an opportunity to do this, I thought, okay, well, let's see if I can breathe some life back into this. Let's see if I can find the metaphoric, the allegorical ground that made this mythology resonate in the first place.
Find those things.
Really try to breathe life back into it. And then finally, also, it's always fun to give lesser experienced people a real opportunity to do something interesting.
Right.
And let them work with some more seasoned people.
Mix it up.
Because that's how they'll get better.
Exactly.
And also, that's how some of the more veteran people might have just a little bit of fun.
Reinvigorate themselves after, yes.
So it's a really great cast. You know, you make an appearance.
I do. You actually are
credited in the end credits as Dean Haglund as himself.
Yeah, because, you know, I hang out with vampires. I'm not going to lie to you.
It does kind of look like you're, like the scene that you have, like you're just taking a break from hosting X-Files on U2 TV.
Is that right?
That's what it kind of looks like. And then you drop in to actually explain the rules of television.
That's cool. So we can do a companion piece. You could probably market it on U2 TV. I don't know what happens with the short film now. Short film festivals, what's the future for this thing?
I think that's what they want. I mean, I think their hope is that it's the sort of thing that could garner some awards, and I would think maybe it could.
Really?
I mean, I don't know. You know, it's 22 minutes long. That's a sizable short film.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, the pacing is great, and it is funny.
Really?
And it is sexy, and it is deeply disturbing and odd, and the most odd thing about it is how kind of sad and touching it is too. So it's this really interesting mix.
Awesome. Do they hand out an award for best two-line cameo on these?
What about best storyboards?
Oh, there we go.
They might.
They might hand that out.
They might indeed do that. Okay, so anyway, so I feel really good about that. But to get back to your point, I think one of the reasons that it did come out in a way that, with which I'm so very pleased, is that I never felt any pressure on it at all.
It's
a short film.
And that's the freedom.
Yeah.
That's the freedom that you always look for. You know, often I can name many movies where first-time or second-time directors get a big studio feature and you can see the pressure ruining the movie. I'm thinking of The Tourist with Johnny Depp and Angelina Jolie. There's, a perfect example of a director just feeling that kind of pressure and not having any freedom or any fun.
I have thought, about that before, how I never would want to work with a bigger budget because of the pressure would just make it no fun.
Right.
And as indeed it did with the largest budget that I've ever worked with, which was not a big budget film, but it really was. I think I'd tripled the size of my previous budget, and so I got so many more toys to play with, cranes and things like this. But boy, the pressure was just awful. But that's also a choice, and that's just perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I think I could do something like that, or direct a television show, or something like this, without the sense of pressure. For the same reason with the short film, which is I don't need it.
You don't need it.
I can keep doing what I do. And so that's that is very freeing. Now the question is, in those circumstances with the larger budgets or television, you know, with the constraints that come with them, would I have the fun?
Yeah.
And that I don't know.
You don't know. You don't know until you're there and who else is involved and the energy on the set and all that. Okay.
We talked last week, and one of the reasons I think that it was a show that seems to have really struck a chord with many of our listeners, we talked about many issues through kind of the perspective of my background in violence prevention.
And Penn State.
And my background is the football coach at Penn State. What?
No, what? No.
No, I don't know.
Your Ivy League status of a university.
UCLA.
Is not an Ivy League school?
You don't really. The weird thing about it is that you never actually insult me by talking about my ivory tower of cultural elitism that is a public university in California. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think you... You color yourself more than you color me
I see three fingers
paint with
point
that brush.
Very good.
We've got so much other stuff to cover, but
yes. You're gonna read.
Did you see the news about the assistant casting director on Super 8?
Yes.
And movies?
Yeah, that he had changed his name and that
he was working under an alias, which is not uncommon,
right?
Especially in casting, I think a lot of times actors will work in casting.
And they use change their name so that they're not ruining their career.
Right.
Yes.
And So this assistant casting director on Super 8, that was the big movie they mentioned. And, of course, J.J. Abrams came out immediately with a statement. So that's why it was kind of front and center,
right.
I think.
He's the one that called the police, actually.
This is a casting director who had directly been responsible for hiring many child actors in films. And he's a convicted kidnapper and pedophile.
Yeah, I know. And that's the sort of thing, what kind of background check can you do when you have, you know, alias name. And April Webster, who was doing the casting on that, said they were never alone with the kids and there was never any problem. And April actually cast the Lone Gunman. So, you know, I know her and she's good for a word. So, and she would never knowingly do
right.
this sort of thing.
Well, who would? Well, yeah, no one would.
Well, yeah, but there's some that go, well, you've done your time, you're reformed, we'll give you a break, that sort of thing. But,
well, and indeed, and maybe this is why we're talking about this. You know, I do believe that obviously if people have done their time and society has said, okay, that's the punishment you're supposed to pay, well, then they've done it. And indeed, I am a big believer in forgiveness and don't think it's ever my place to forgive someone in the first place,
right.
Nor is it my place to necessarily condemn someone in the first place, right? Other than myself. It's, you know, the question, am I able to forgive myself of my behavior? But there is the issue of forgiving someone. There is the issue of saying, okay, they've done their time. They deserve, now that they are out, to have a life.
Right.
Then there is the other thing, which is, are you going to let them
try the
work
waters
with
here. Yeah.
children?
Yeah.
Because the kind of pathology in play with people who do things to children, this is not something that gets taken care of by punishment.
Right. But that's the whole concept, is that, you know, our largest mental health institution right now is County Lockup right here in downtown, and that there is mental health services reform. This is the two concepts of prison. Is one, are we warehousing bad people, or are we taking them and reforming them and rehabilitating them to return into society?
Right.
And so I always wrestle with this back and forth.
And
every
again,
time.
With Penn State, you know, if you have children around, in a professional setting, which is already such a compromised situation, because
right.
you are, to a degree, exploiting children already. You are exploiting their talents.
Right.
And whether it be for the benefit of the football team, which generates so much income for a school, or
right.
or for the benefit of a performance for a film that you hope will generate much income for a corporation.
Right.
Boy, it is incumbent upon you to protect them. In every way you can. So it goes beyond the issue of whether or not someone deserves a second chance. Yes, this person might deserve a second chance, and this person's chosen field might be casting, and let them cast. On the other hand, they should not be around children.
Right.
Especially also in a business enterprise where, let's face it, we've got to get to the point where avoiding the appearance of impropriety is at least as important, if
right.
not more important, as avoiding the impropriety to begin with.
Right.
You know,
that I agree with. Yeah.
If we just said, look, we're not gonna put anything in this. You know, trust in any business enterprise, and certainly in any creative enterprise, trust is everything.
Right.
And
which is why it's so hard to do business in this town.
So you establish that trust to a certain degree by making sure that
no one
is ever in a potentially
harmful situation
or even ambiguous situation.
Right.
So.
Okay.
Woo.
There
and now, 30 minutes in, we'll start today's show. Big Hollywood news.
What?
This week is enduring Hollywood news, really.
I love enduring Hollywood.
And it's the reopening of the investigation into Natalie Wood's death.
I know. What's the new information that possibly could come forward?
And apparently it's a lot of new information is
yeah.
what they said. Reopening. Almost 30 years ago, Natalie Wood died under mysterious circumstances.
Well, mysterious in that no one could remember because they were all drinking on a boat and she hits her head and drowns.
Maybe. We don't know.
That seems like the thing.
By some reports, of course, Christopher Walken, and who was her co-star at the time in in Brainstorm, and right. Robert Wagner, who was her husband, had been fighting after a day of drinking. They'd been fighting.
One does when you're drunk. You start right. saying
although
things.
That has fueled rumors about affairs and things like this, although by other accounts, the affair that was going on was between Christopher Walken and Robert Wagner.
Which may be why we brought on the boat in the first place. Let's hash this out.
So many competing stories and theories sure. and all of these. But yeah, indeed, what could be the new information? I mean, a lot was made out of the fact that the captain of the boat recently did an interview where he talked about how he lied to investigators all those years ago and that Robert Wagner is responsible for this. Of course, this is not new news because he's been saying that story,
forever.
Recanting his original story forever.
Yeah.
So what is the new information? And also very interesting to point out that the police went so far as to say that Robert Wagner is not a suspect.
Right. Yeah, because what he recanted was Robert Wagner said, don't bother looking for her, in that you had a huge fight. What are you going to do? She's gone for 10 minutes. You go, we got to put out a search party. That would, you know, if you're in a relationship and there's been a big fight and she storms off and then she's not back in 10 minutes and you send out a search party, I think that would exacerbate the fight even more.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So he was probably walking on eggshells, just wanted to give some cool down time, not trying to go, she fell in the water and she's drowning. Don't look for her.
What I'm curious about is this whole statement that Robert Wagner is not a suspect.
Mm-hmm.
If he is not a suspect, I think that's great that they said he's not a suspect so that people will lay off him and his family. My question is, can they say that if he is a suspect? Are they allowed to publicly say he's not a suspect? I don't know. I have no idea with something like that.
So you mean they're throwing the scent off the press to actually he is the suspect and they want to make sure that this isn't tried out in front of the media. So they're right. saying repeatedly he's
or
not a suspect.
Or to take him off guard.
Take him off guard.
Well, are you allowed to do that? I mean, I don't know.
There's no to tell the truth in an investigation. I mean, these police... press conference, they can say whatever they want.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm surprised they don't do that more often.
Are there any conspiracy theories that you know of surrounding this?
I mean, I don't actually. I mean, other than
Natalie Wood was a huge star, 3-time Oscar nominee.
Yeah,
it was a fairy tale Hollywood romance that they had. It is interesting that her mysterious death has not had with it the conspiracy.
Yes, the alternative storylines
as James Dean. As Marilyn Monroe. As
what about the Charlie Chaplin Marion Davis boat ride that ended in gunshots and the other?
But I was thinking like her same. Contemporaries because these were all her contemporaries, right?
Yeah.
Dean, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, and then even a little bit later, you know, Princess Di. All of these things that people cannot let go of to the point that narratives need to be authored around
right.
them. And with her, it never really happened. And the only thing that I can really grasp a hold of, because quite frankly, unlike Elvis, unlike some of these others that I've mentioned, there really are mysterious circumstances surrounding her death. There really is a mystery, but no narratives have really been authored that really, you know, are capturing the imagination in that way. And the only thing that I can describe for the reason why is that Natalie Wood lived too long.
Oh. Really?
There isn't the sense that she died too young.
Right.
Because she, like all these others, were this kind of iconic figure in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But they all died the icon. Even Elvis.
Even Elvis. Yeah. Did. It's at the, 77. But Natalie Wood, you're saying it was on the other side of the...
She was coming back. She was about to engage in a comeback. But let's face it, if this accident had taken place in 1970... I think it would have been quite different.
Huh. That's fascinating.
Because there is something about this refusal to accept the young and the beautiful with the world in the palm of their hands.
Yeah, how could that happen?
How could that happen?
As opposed to the other way around. You know, I can think of many
celebrity
tragedy trusts.
So let me try to fill the...
Conspiracy void?
If I can.
Please do.
And help inspire some authoring.
Push,
let me point
push
out...
Push conjecture in the air, if you could.
What was Christopher Walken's role in all of this? And that leads me to a more, as I asked that question, it led me to this question. What was Mike Myers' role in all of it? I mean,
what?
Christopher Walken stars in Mike Myers' franchise Wayne's World. Robert Wagner stars in Mike Myers' other franchise, the Austin Powers movies.
I see.
Interesting. What could that fight have been about? Was Mike Myers involved?
Okay, so you realize Mike Myers was still in Toronto.
What was Diamonds Are Forever's role in all this? I mean, Diamonds Are Forever, starring Natalie Wood's younger sister, Lana Wood.
Right.
Playing Plenty O'Toole.
Plenty O'Toole.
And also starred Jill St. John, who would become the future Mrs. Robert Wagner. And, of course, had long been rumored that they had an ongoing affair.
Long before. So the sister found out on Diamonds Are Forever, and then...
Interesting. I just throw these are pebbles that I throw into the water to see what...
Fantastic.
From one tragic end to a storybook Hollywood romance... to Ashton Kutcher and Demi Moore.
Really?
This was a sad thing.
Do you follow him on Twitter?
Well, I haven't had the heart to. Because, look, as long as Demi and Ashton Kutcher were together, there was always hope for me that true love really can prevail.
Really?
That it can last. It can endure. And now I'm bereft of that. I'm floating anchorless at this point.
I'm so sorry to hear that. Yeah. I wish I could give you some solace, some sort of island in the sea of misery that you could go and row your ship to. But I can't. I'm going to let you just wallow in the misery that is their broken relationship.
I have several other things that we will discuss, maybe some development news, all these, but I really do want to revisit because you had your hand on the pulse, my friend.
I did.
This is a brand new segment we've been doing for a few weeks now, and it's called
Celebrity Lawsuits.
Your Chilpack Hollywood Lawsuit of the Week.
Lawsuit of the Week.
And the one that you picked and brought up on your own was IMDb being sued by an anonymous actress.
For ageism
by publishing actors' birth dates and ages. And this is something that both SAG and AFTRA have been upset about for a long time.
Long time.
And they, as we've discussed, rightly so, because the truth is the age does not matter in terms of whether someone is good for a role.
Exactly.
It is one of those things. Sadly, I think like someone coming out. As gay, it affects only the audience's perception of whether that person is believable in the role if they give weight to that.
Right.
If they find out that a certain actor is a certain age and they can't get over it, and I gave the personal example last week of producers on a film that we did together, once they knew the age of an actress, they could not believe that she was the age she was supposed to be playing.
Right.
So then I realized I should just lie.
Yeah.
And I lied and said that the next person in was the right age, even though she was in fact much older. So this does happen, and it happens of people
all
of goodwill. You just have a hard time believing anymore because of the baggage that an actor brings with them. Right?
Just on their resume.
This happens. We have a hard time sometimes believing actors in certain roles because we just still see them too much as another role that they play.
Think about Sean Hayes on Broadway playing a heterosexual character. I can't even remember the play, but that everyone goes, well, I can't believe that.
I can't believe it. And it doesn't matter because do they have chemistry?
But
it is just this thing. And it's why typecasting actually does exist, because audiences just can't stop seeing an actor as a certain character. So every Anthony Perkins, no one could ever see him as anything other than Norman Bates again, even though he played a wide variety of roles before that. And if you hadn't seen Psycho, well, then you wouldn't have any problem with Anthony Perkins playing a wide variety of roles again.
But because everybody saw it.
So age is another factor in this. And it's back. It was back in the news. You really brought it up before it blew up big.
Because all the editors are listening to Chilpack Hollywood Hour.
IMDb is not backing down from a debate about values, far from it. In its motion to dismiss filed last week, and this was reported by The Hollywood Reporter, the company questioned whether the judicial system should be used to help an actress perpetrate fraud. And that's what they accuse her of, by trying to hide her age. And in that, they list her age again.
Oh my God, perpetrate fraud?
According to IMDb, truth and justice are philosophical pillars of this court. The perpetuation of fraud, even for an actor's career, is inconsistent with these principles. Plaintiffs attempt to manipulate the federal court system so she can censor IMDb's display of her birth date and pretend to the world that she is not 40 years old is selfish, contrary to the public interest, and a frivolous abuse of this court's resources.
Wow. That is a shot across the bow, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or direct torpedo to the Nads.
I mean, this is, again, what kind of we were talking about last week. We live in the society where corporations have the rights of individuals without any accountability.
Right.
I mean, LLC. If this woman was your mother, your sister, your girlfriend, your friend, or God forbid you were a human being with compassion and some sort of level of polite upbringing, you might have the reaction of, you know what? A woman's age is none of our goddamn business ever. It's rude to talk about this sort of thing. And
well, there's that.
But
there's sociological
as
issues.
A corporation, no individual has the responsibility to step up and do the human thing.
Right.
In fact, they all have the responsibility to keep doing their part to make the corporation run as efficiently and profitably
as possible.
Right,
because IMDb prides itself on its accuracy of information.
So here is a corporation, and of course they're owned by Amazon, and here is a corporation, a big corporation, a powerful corporation that has the rights of an individual, and yet none of the humanity, because how can they? They are a corporation. They. Right. It is not a he.
Right. Though in the early days, I ran into the guy who was running IMDb. But anyway,
and it was a so how thing. About knowing that people are upset about this on many different levels? How about this reminds me to a degree of, you know, just you know what? Don't be. You don't have to be rude. You can defend yourself, and you can defend yourself on a legal standpoint. But don't be rude towards women.
Right, and just reiterate their age.
And also, by the way, the stupidity of this thing, you know, I mean, it may get held up in legal action, but just, you know, truth and justice are philosophical pillars of this court. The perpetuation of fraud, even for an actor's career, is inconsistent with these principles.
Well, is it fraud, though?
Is it fraud? Isn't the job of an actor to bring everything they have to bear to as believably play the part as they are asked to play? Isn't that their job?
Right.
Isn't that what you're celebrating?
Not fraud about how...
And when did an actor's personal details ever become a part of that? Obviously, they are. People want to know about the people who play the parts, but that has nothing to do with the professional thing. And IMDb has long positioned itself as a professional tool.
True. But, I'm going to argue on their side for a second, because
this is one of the things that people talk to me about recently. How often it's great that you start on one side of something and then you, by the end, have moved over to another.
To the other side, and here's
with your top 10 list.
With my top, yes, exactly.
This is my seventh favorite film, and by the end, I didn't like it at all.
I hate that film. Why is it on my list? I'm going to say fraud. They are technically accurate in fraud, and that it's the fault then of our Hollywood society in how we can't get past knowing the age of a young actress who may be great for, you know, a teenage role, but because we say 30, isn't that then the responsibility of us to then change our perception and let the company that actually prides itself in accurate information allow?
That's true. That is a good. I mean, they are in a position. You're absolutely right. They are in a position where they. It is about the accuracy of the information that they put up correcting that information.
And correcting
that information. They get into trouble whenever there isn't accurate information.
So if they're legally mandated, then not put some
Or not even legally mandated, but yes, if they are trying to hold true to, look, the information you're going to get here is going to be accurate.
Right.
Then absolutely, that you make a very solid point. And if she lied about what her birth date was, that is it. Maybe she did, and so maybe she's going to have trouble with this lawsuit. I still think many of us find distasteful their statement that they made. They don't have to go after her in that way to defend themselves. But also, I think that it could and maybe should be a rallying cry then for so many performers who have had problems with Internet Movie Database because they never filled in
their
birthday. IMDb went and dug out and found and published it.
Well, often on the call sheets, you have to put in that information for SAG for your...
Right, but shouldn't that be private? Yeah, much like your social security number. And after all, think of how much information you can get about somebody if you have their actual birthday.
That's true. But you can get the, yeah.
So I would think that, boy, a really fun class action lawsuit of people who never never bothered to lie about it, who simply have been trying to get their dates taken down.
Yeah, exactly.
And saying, we never signed off on this information.
Spectacular. So you're a rallying point now for a class action lawsuit against IMDb.
So I love that. So anyway, congratulations to you for doing such an excellent job in picking the Chilpack Hollywood lawsuit of the week.
Thank you. It is
our first ever two-time Chilpack Hollywood lawsuit.
I didn't know we actually give it
of the week. So here's a little bit of a Chilpack Hollywood development news.
Ah, we love development news.
David Yates, who was in charge of directing the final four Harry Potter films,
yes,
including this one, which may figure prominently on top 10 lists on your Chilpack Hollywood
hour. Really?
As well as Oscar nominations.
I might have to see it.
But he is in charge of rebooting Doctor Who as a cinematic franchise, big budget cinematic franchise. It will be a fresh reboot, which were the words that were kind of music to my ear, because as we've talked about before, I have no idea how to get into it. I've never had any idea. Even when I was a kid and I first became aware of it, I went, this is just too overwhelming.
Yeah,
I don't know
and it was so long running. It felt like Coronation Street with a sonic screwdriver, really. I mean,
that's going on their DVD art, their box. Dean Haglund, Coronation Street with a sonic screwdriver.
Exactly.
Dean Haglund, your Chilpack Hollywood Hour.
See, to me, the joy, part of the fun of Doctor Who was its low rent special effects. The Dalek, obviously a guy in a chair, pushing the little robots around. And
I'm gonna call back to J.J. Abrams here for a second with Star Trek, because that was always true about the classic
Star
Trek,
right?
As
and they built that out.
Yeah.
Okay, you got me.
And introduced it to a whole group of fans that never were interested.
True.
And I might be one of those people with Doctor Who.
Well,
I may go from Doctor Who cares to
Doctor Who.
Doctor
is...
Who. Who is this interesting cat?
I dig this Doctor Who.
Oh my God! Now I am creeped out. Your revenge was
circle.
A dish that was served cold.
I hate it.
So that TV franchise is going to be rebooted as a movie franchise.
And David Yates knows a bit less.
Apparently, Man from U.N.C.L.E. is one TV franchise that will not be rebooted.
What?
At least not with Steven Soderbergh, who has finally left after the frustrations. George Clooney left, casting. It never has seemed like the studio has quite known what they wanted to do. Do they want to cast it young? And if they do cast it young, who do they have when Ryan Gosling says no, because he's the only young actor anybody can ever think of?
Yeah, I know.
So how do they do that? Because Clooney obviously was not going to anchor a franchise with the age that he is. He may have anchored kind of a fun, tongue-in-cheek, adventure film a la the Ocean's 11 movies.
Yeah.
If anyone was going to do a Man from U.N.C.L.E. reboot,
who should be?
As a filmmaker who has now maybe for the first time decided that a big budget wouldn't scare him. I don't know. This might be the sort of thing that would be in my wheelhouse. Would be
what?
A 60s spy reboot. Think about it.
I would
it.
Think, well, you are a lover of The Prisoner.
All of those, and Secret Agent, and Danger Man, and all these. Wild Wild West, I mean...
Well, we'll see how appearances does, and then we'll get talking.
I'll do a short on a spy. Yeah,
spy who's a vampire.
Now, TV that has long been rumored to be rebooted as a film franchise is Arrested Development.
Yes.
But the big news this week that it's back as a TV series.
On?
Exclusively on Netflix.
Which I just canceled my account.
You may be bringing it back. I mean, what a smart move for
That's
Netflix.
A smart
after
move
all
for
the bad
bull,
press they've been
idiot,
getting.
Idiot, stupid shit and crap they've done. This is the one thing that made me go, I regret. Camping.
On the other hand, I'm part of a class action lawsuit, and you might be as well, for Netflix.
Netflix, really?
Yeah, I got this email about it, and I don't have to do anything to be a part of the class action, but apparently it's a lawsuit about unfair business practices that were entered into between Netflix and Walmart.
Ah.
That Netflix stopped selling DVDs in a deal because they were stepping on Walmart's toes, and so Walmart agreed to stop to. Some kind of rental thing or streaming.
Is this why Carl Rove, I Love You, was never found for the longest time?
I don't know. I'm not a leading figure behind this. I advocate the class action suit against IMDb. I do not necessarily advocate, but you know, if they want to send me a check for something.
What was the Michael Moore documentary you couldn't get for the longest time, even though you said DVDs are the easiest thing to replicate, and yet you couldn't get...
I don't remember.
Sicko?
Yeah.
Was it Sicko, I think?
It might have been Sicko, sure.
It took like 3 months for that to get to you because they didn't have it, where you said, quite rightly, it is nothing to duplicate these things and have 80,000 of them sitting in a warehouse and just mail them out when people want them. And yet it seemed they only had one disc to share amongst all the millions of Netflix subscribers.
Yeah.
I thought that was odd.
What else do we have to... Oh, fun new segment that we inaugurated last week after getting a tweet from one of your listeners.
Yeah.
It's the Chilpack Hollywood Wingnut of the Week.
Yes.
And this is inspired, again, because Truth Is Out There was criticized by one of your followers on Twitter for not revealing the truth, far from it, obscuring the truth. By giving voice to so many wingnuts.
Right.
And so we here at Chilpack Hollywood Hour, we celebrate and champion the wingnuts.
Of history.
We encourage...
all wingnuts.
Generosity to listen to all voices, to invite all voices to participate in conversation without the need to reject or exclude or silence any of them.
Right.
And who could be better as a wingnut of the week than William Blake?
William Blake, of all things.
Born in 1757, died in August 1827. Of course, he was an English poet, painter, printmaker, largely unrecognized during his lifetime, except, hey, it's that crazy William Blake. Now considered a seminal figure in history of both poetry and the visual arts of the Romantic Age. Mm-hmm. His prophetic poetry has been said to form what is in proportion to its merits, the least read body of poetry in the English language.
Isn't that funny? I did have a friend who actually was getting a major in William Blake studies.
His visual artistry has led him to being eventually proclaimed by artists, as some have called him, far and away the greatest artist Britain ever produced.
True, of the Romantic period.
And although he lived in his entire life, for the most part, except for 3 years in London, he produced a diverse and symbolically rich body of work, which embraced the imagination as the living body of God.
Wow.
And as human existence itself. So he was considered mad by his contemporaries for his idiosyncratic views and for his reported visions.
Ah.
And yet he's held in high regard, as we've said, by these critics for his expressiveness and his creativity and for the philosophical and mystical undercurrents within his work. So the very thing that led him to be determined as a wingnut led to his being celebrated by later
generations. Which is always the thing. This generation's wingnut is next generation's amazing prophet.
He was reverent of the Bible, but hostile to the Church of England.
Good.
And indeed to all forms of organized religion.
As
gee,
one.
Why do you think he might have been
considered a wingnut?
Yeah, accused of being mad and silenced. And he was greatly influenced by the ideals and ambitions of the French and American Revolution. And so I thought, who better to conclude this tribute to the Chilpack Hollywood Wingnut of the Week than with the words of Wordsworth, wrote, "There was no doubt that this poor man was mad, but there is something in the madness of this man which interests me more than the sanity of Lord Byron and Walter Scott."
Wow.
And maybe that's it. Maybe the thing is, let's stop arguing about whether someone is mad or not, and let's start encouraging them to embrace their madness. So that because if we all uniquely embrace our madness, we are all idiosyncratic in our own ways, and if we learn to celebrate those idiosyncrasies and embrace them, then we don't have to spend so much time fighting them or being taken by them.
Right.
Because they do demand expression. They are part of our makeup. And much as every single voice embodied by a human is part of our collective makeup, so let's invite it all to the party. And that's why we celebrate your Chill Pack Hollywood Wingnut of the Week.
William Blake, congratulations.
An award
will be going out to the family and the estate.
He's not here to accept,
this
award.
But he will get one in the mail.
Boy, so much news and so much that we're not going
to get to.
But I'll get to this later. So we'll just conclude with the final new Chill Pack Hollywood segment.
Viewer mail.
That came from Monty Cooper, our friend Monty Cooper.
Oh, Monty Cooper. How is he?
Who loves the idea of the Chill Pack Hollywood explanation of the week. And of course, last week's involved film preservation.
Yes. And we explained that very well.
And I think that the Chill Pack Hollywood explanation of the week should always be when it is a topic that is inquired about by one of our loyal listeners.
That's what we love, because that's why your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
And this week it comes from a newcomer to your podcast.
Welcome, newcomer.
This is an email we received at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. Chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com.
So easy.
Where people can write us and we'll answer their emails and maybe even answer their emails on the show.
Like this one.
Hi, I'm a newcomer to your podcast, and I'm enjoying it thoroughly.
Thank you.
I'm also in charge of guest relations for Starbase Indy.
Yay!
And we're excited that Dean will be joining us in a couple weeks.
December 9th.
I wonder who I need to beg, implore, or bribe to get you to mention his appearance at our convention on your show. And maybe on the webpage for The Truth Is Out There as an appearance.
Ah.
Thanks, Lisa. Well, Lisa, the explanation of how to get that mentioned on the show is write us at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com.
That's that easy.
So mentioned. As far as getting that link put up on the website to The Truth Is Out There, which is truth-is-out-there.com, Truth Is Out There with dashes in it, you can, in fact, go to that website to always keep track of where we're going to be screening the film on the big screen.
On the big screen near you.
Also, how to order various versions, DVD, Blu-ray, digital download editions of the film, wherever you may live. There is a way that you can see the film if you can get to a computer, and if not, you're probably not listening to me now, at truth-is-out-there.com. So, Dean, the explanation, how can she get the link to Starbase Indy put on that website?
Well, I have to go to my computer. Oh, look at this, my computer right here. It's recording. It's so silent.
Well, you're not allowed to mention why it's silent.
I know. But the deal is that once I update the website, that'll be mentioned. And there'll be a link to Starbase Indy, where I'll be in Indianapolis from December 9th to December 11th, showing The Truth Is Out There, and also performing an improvised comedy episode of, I think I'm doing The X-Files. It's been a long time since I've done an improv of The X-Files, but that's going to be on Saturday night at Indianapolis in the Indy, Starbase Indy.
Did you explain how to get the link on the website? Because that was the question.
How to get the link. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. What I do is I got a program on my computer that's a web design program, and I will open the page that has all the other shows. Then I will actually write maybe something that says like Starbase Indy.
You know what? Maybe this explanation would be too long if you just said you'll put it up as soon as we're done.
Oh, is that all? I didn't know how much detail you needed in web design.
Yeah, I don't know.
See, in CSS,
this is still a new segment. We're still working the Chill Pack Hollywood explanation of the week.
Right, because I could explain CSS and PHP coding. Is that really what we're doing on this show?
I love that Hollywood is so into social media. You know, Regina King, the star of Southland.
Oh, yeah.
She has been tapped as, this is an official title, Social Media Ambassador for the 18th Annual Screen Actors Guild Awards on January 29th. They required an announcement for this. Organizers of the SAG Awards said she will post on Twitter and Facebook.
Wow, good for her.
King will serve, this is the quote, this is the description, she will serve as the online face for the awards, giving viewers unprecedented access to behind-the-scenes moments during the weeks building up to the show.
Oh, good God.
As well as from the red carpet. If anything could kill social media, it's behind-the-scenes in the weeks leading up to an award show.
Oh, my God.
You think the award show's boring. Oh.
We've just hung the curtains.
And meanwhile, though, what I love is because nature abhors a vacuum, must be balance. There must be this and that. As Hollywood reaches out with an ambassador, a social media ambassador, so too do they have the anti-social a media ambassador, and that would be Jimmy Kimmel, who held his second annual National Unfriend Day on Facebook, advocating that people trim down their friend rosters, and he has hopes that that National Unfriend Day will eventually supplant in the public consciousness, in the popular consciousness, the Jerry Lewis Labor Day telethon. I myself am down one friend.
Oh, who dumped him?
Because Bobby Brown's profile was deleted on Facebook.
What?
Yeah, it may have actually been Garrett Watley at Rocketworks, and it's been deleted. But he posted wonderful things, Bobby Brown, and his friendship will be missed. You can be, of course, a liker of this very show on Facebook. We may not be social media ambassadors to Hollywood.
But we are podcast royalty.
And we are your friends in podcasting.
Exactly.
So come along for the ride at Facebook, facebook.com/chillpackhollywood.
Yes.
You can also check out our blog every week, myspace.com.
We still keep that up?
Chillpack Hollywood. Every week we do a preview.
On MySpace?
Yeah, we have hundreds of people come and check out our blog previewing the next week's show.
On MySpace.
Yeah.
MySpace, the abandoned amusement park of the internet.
That we get visitors to that. Their blog format still works very, very well. Why
Fantastic.
Not?
Why not?
And, of course, we're on Twitter. You can follow Dean.
At D. Haglin.
And I'm Phil Lernis.
Easy to do.
And I think I've listed all the...
all the things.
So we'll be in the Pacific Northwest this week, and
we'll
be back...
next Monday with a big report on how the whole
weekend...
With a
truly international discussion. Next week, we'll have an international feel to
it. You'll hear how it went. And get your tickets, of course, at the website. And we'll see you there in Seattle and Vancouver.
Till then, I'm Phil Lerner.
I'm Dean Haglin. Bye.